I'm a huge Larry Duvernay Tardif fan, so I understand the dedication that it takes to be a doctor. We're all blessed to have doctors in our lives. They're givers, they're not takers, they're givers. And so Larry has that quality. I just think it's tremendous dedication to his profession, what his future is going to be, and mainly to the people that he gets to help.
That was Chiefs head coach Andy Reid talking about a player who hasn't played a snap this whole season, but has contributed more in 2020 than anyone across the NFL. And while he's Larry in Kansas City, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is more than just a football player in his native Quebec, Canada. He's a hero. Today, Matt Dorman, a fellow Canadian, tells the singular story of an athlete who passed up a shot at another Super Bowl for a job he deemed even more important. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, December 24th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Matt, I am bringing you on today because you're a feature producer for TSN, our sister network in Canada, and you've done several stories now on an athlete whose life story, I think, embodies 2020 more than any other. And his name is Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. This is a guy who started 2020 by winning a Super Bowl with the Chiefs, and then in the offseason decides to sit out this year in the NFL while his team is heavily favored to win yet another Super Bowl. And he does this for a decidedly unique reason, Matt. What was it?
The unique thing about Laurent is he's not just a football player. He's also a doctor. He actually got his medical degree back in 2018.
My ultimate goal was to step on the field with the MD in my back pocket.
Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
And he's the only active NFL player with a medical degree today. When the pandemic hit, Laurent decided that, you know what, I want to volunteer. You know, I have this degree. I want to be able to help out.
As I read more about what was going on, immediately my thought went from, oh my God, this is tough for me, to how can I help?
Long-term healthcare facilities, nursing homes, they were hit the hardest, especially in the Quebec area, also in Ontario, where I am from. So Laurent saw the stress that was put on the healthcare workers, and he was like, if I can just get in there and alleviate some of the stress on them, as well as, you know, lifting up the spirits of some of the most at-risk patients in the elderly, I'm going to do anything I can possibly do.
It's our duty as a citizen to really think about, what can I do to fight this thing?
Just that biographical detail alone is crazy, that this is a guy who managed to get a degree in medicine while playing right guard in the NFL and playing, by the way, really well. The Chiefs signed him a couple years ago to a 5-year, $41 million contract extension. But to get back to his medical career, I mean, it speaks to this very unusual path that Laurent has taken to the league. So tell us where Laurent is from and how did he grow up?
Laurent is from a town outside of Montreal. It's about 30 minutes outside of Montreal, Mont-Saint-Hilaire. Quebec is obviously predominantly French-speaking part of Canada, and he grew up speaking French as his first language. His parents were like, you know, we want to do things different.
I admire the way my parents raised me. They told me when I was a kid to take risks, to take opportunity.
His dad, who was a teacher in agriculture, actually said, you know what? My dream is to be able to sail down the coast with my family for a year-long sailing trip. So he quits his job. Him and his wife, Guylaine, along with Laurent and his two sisters, got in a boat and sailed down the coast for a year, all the way down to the east coast of the United States, right down to the Caribbean. While he was there, he was homeschooled by his parents.
Wow.
He actually learned, you know, different life experiences.
So wait, they're sailing up and down the Atlantic coast. But what do they do when they're not in a boat? Like, what's their business? How do they make a living?
Laurent's grandfather owned a winery. Francois, his father, was working at the winery. And, you know, when they came back, they decided to sell the winery. Francois got involved in the culinary arts and he opened up a bakery. And now they have several bakeries in the Montreal area.
So you have this family, this decidedly non-traditional lifestyle that they've embraced, where they're sailing together, they're running a vineyard, they're running bakeries. I mean, this, forgive me, Matt, this sounds like the idyllic French-Canadian life. And it's because of these very different childhood experiences, Matt, that Laurent doesn't even start playing football until he's 14 years old. He commits to studying medicine at McGill, a very prestigious university in Montreal. And he ultimately decides to play football at McGill as well. What do you think drew Laurent to the game of football?
Laurent has always said that he loved being on the field with his teammates. He loved working as a team, much like as a medical doctor working on the floor with the team.
An operating room is kind of similar as a football field in the sense that there's 11 people or 12 people working together. And you got to know where you fit in that team.
So I think he's like, you know what, this is a dream. I want to play for the highest level in this sport that I can play at. And obviously in Canada, you don't have a long list of players that have made it there. But he set his mind to it and he says, I'm going to do this. Laurent was never invited to the combine. So his best friend, Sasha, who's also his agent, put on the first pro day in Canada for Laurent.
This is a kid who is studying, playing football, and helping out at his family's bakery all at the same time, and he gets a pro day.
Yeah.
When scouts come to this pro day, what do they see?
It was great because it's like, so he goes to the pro day, you know, the nine teams were there. He's getting ready to train, and you know, his family brings in croissants and bagels and everything from the bakery. And hey, I have to provide my guests with some refreshment and something to eat. So what better way to do that than combine it all together?
Few pro days are that well catered, for the record.
Yeah.
What's the vibe around what he is like as a player?
Well, I think NFL teams saw him as, you know, he's 6'5". He's super strong, and he's very intelligent. Even though he didn't have, maybe he wasn't up against the best competition playing up here in Canada, they saw the potential. They saw that in the right environment, they could foster maybe him becoming something great.
So at 6'5", 315, like, this is a big kid. He ends up making it onto a lot of teams' draft boards. And he ends up being selected in the sixth round by the Kansas City Chiefs in the 2014 NFL draft. And most players, Matt, they'd just be like watching the draft on TV all weekend, celebrating. What was Laurent doing?
So Laurent, you know, obviously he was still a medical student at the time. And, you know, Laurent was actually working a shift.
I received like a phone call saying that we got to go to the OR because a patient was going in premature labor with twins.
So Laurent is in the room with the rest of the medical staff helping to deliver twins as the draft's going on. So I remember him telling me that he had handed his phone off to one of the nurses and said,
if somebody calls, pick up and say yes.
So the message was, I'm sorry, Laurent can't come to the phone right now. He's delivering premature twins. He'll have to call you back.
Pretty much.
Eventually, he makes his way to Kansas City. He says yes to the Chiefs. He makes the team. He wants to continue working towards this medical degree. What do his new teammates in Kansas City make of him?
I mean, when he came in, right, French is his predominant language, right? So I think when he came in as kind of being like a fish out of water. But as a player started hearing that he's also becoming a doctor, I think it was just confusion at first. Like, this can't be real.
How much time when you're in Kansas City are you spending thinking about medical school and your studies at McGill?
To be honest, not much. Like, when I'm down here, I try to focus 100% on football. I think medical school still has an important place, and I try to stay on top of things a little bit, but honestly, the main focus is on football.
What's his relationship with Andy Reid like?
I think he has a great relationship with Andy Reid. I know a lot of people in the Chiefs organization and Coach Reid call him Larry.
I'm a huge Larry Duvernay-Tardif fan. So
I just think Laurent is harder to say. So Larry just rolls off the tongue a little better.
And you wouldn't expect anything different from Larry when you get to know Larry.
Andy Reid's mother was also a doctor, and she went to McGill as well.
Huh.
So Coach Reid is probably the most understanding. He understands how important this is, especially, you know, having a mother who's in the same field. And he's like, this is a passion of Laurent's, and, you know, he has to follow it. So he's been very supportive of it.
So Laurent officially earns his medical degree in 2018, becoming the only doctor in the NFL. And he's even been able to show off his medical knowledge on the field. Tell us what happened to Laurent in October 2017.
He actually self-diagnosed himself on the field when he had an MCL sprain.
Wait, what does that mean?
So he was in a game. He goes down after getting hit, and he's like, I think I just popped my MCL.
What happened, Larry?
I popped my MCL.
You what?
I heard a pop my MCL.
Your MCL, okay. Yeah. Lay flat, buddy. Lay flat for me.
The medical staff had run out to the field. They went and they said, hey, what's going on, Larry? And he self-diagnosed himself right there. I popped my MCL. He already knew it.
I got an MRI the next day, and it was exactly the left MCL. It was my first clinical diagnosis that I was doing by myself. So, yeah.
Mahomes takes the snap. He is just going to throw it long for DeMarcus Robinson. It is going to use up all the time. The game is over, and the Chiefs' kingdom has firmly planted its flag on top of football's highest summit. The Kansas City Chiefs are champions of Super Bowl 54. Final score, Kansas City.
All of this, of course, builds to Super Bowl 54. This past February, Laurent and the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. What was that like for him? What was that like for the people back in Quebec?
To get to the top of the mountain was just such a culmination of all of his efforts, having his family there watching. It was such a special moment, not just for him, but yeah, I think all of Quebec as well. I mean, I know when he came home after winning, they had a huge celebration. It was a big deal because, you know, in Quebec, they have like their own star system. And Laurent has now become part of that star system. And this was mid-February. He comes back and he had, I think, a crowd of 4,000 people there. There's a lot of Chiefs fans there. If one of your own is in the middle of one of the more incredible stories you've ever heard, I think you're going to follow. And they definitely do in Quebec.
Okay, that's how Laurent Duvernay-Tardif's 2020 started, with a Super Bowl win. So after the break, Matt, I want to talk to you about how it's taken a very different turn since the pandemic.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Matt, the end of February, beginning of March is when the COVID-19 pandemic really takes hold. Where is Laurent at this time and what does he do?
Laurent was actually on vacation with his girlfriend. He was sailing again and he gets word that he needs to come home. He gets home and he goes right into quarantine. And as he's sitting in quarantine, like the focus was on him first, much like everyone else. Like, this is really hard. What am I supposed to do? I can't do anything. This is odd. This is different. And then it started to shift and he's like, you know what? I have this medical degree and I'm hearing there's a lot of stress. There's a lot of scared people out there. And he's hearing that there's a strain in the long-term healthcare facilities. And he's like, I want to help. So Laurent looks into it like many other medical professionals who volunteered their time. And he says, I'm going to go volunteer like them and work at a long-term healthcare facility and help in any capacity that I can.
I'll be a Super Bowl champion forever. But it's not a time to think about playing football. It's a time to think about how, as a society, we're going to be able to protect the ones that are sick.
You did a story on Laurent at this time in May of this year, Matt, and you spent time with him as he was living this surreal sort of a life. What were his days like?
His days were, you know, very different. He'd be waking up fairly early, probably at 5 o'clock in the morning. He would drive in to his bakery to be able to pick up pastries. And then he would drive into the long-term healthcare facility. And I believe he would start at 6 or 7. He's an orderly. So as an orderly, like, his job description would be able to come in and he would do everything from like cleaning patients' rooms or, changing their bed sheets to being able to provide an iPad with a patient's loved one so they can see one of their loved ones who they haven't seen for weeks. He went in there not only just to provide that care, as well as, because of his doctorate, he was able to administer medicine and help with blood tests. So he was able to do a kind of a combination of tasks because of his unique situation. But the one thing is when he went in, he was also trying to bring some levity to the situation.
Sunday, fun day.
He brought in some Chiefs gear and handed out t-shirts and shared some jokes, talked to some patients. In the piece, we actually have Laurent sitting down with one of the patients and just asking him what her favorite team is.
Est-ce que vous preniez pour qui?
Les Chiefs.
She says, the Kansas City Chiefs. And you can see in that moment, she just lights up. She's just talking about some simple conversation, and it's just a break from the everyday and the stresses they're going through. When he would leave the facility after an 8-hour day, he would then go to an apartment. He had an apartment that he had for rent, but he used it as kind of like a buffer zone before he would go home.
This apartment is kind of my transitional zone. It's an empty place. It's kind of like really sterile.
And that would be a place where he would shower, take all the medical scrubs that he would have from the day and be able to wash them there. And then he would take an hour to literally just listen to music and de-stress.
All I was focusing on was caring for the patient, trying to optimize my day, my routine and everything. All I was seeing was the patient in pain, the shortage of people, family not being able to be there at the bedside because it's just the reality of the pandemic. At some point, it was just too much.
He says the amount of stress that he had felt in that environment, you know, just the pain and the uncertainty, it was so important for him to just take a moment because he said it was immense at some times. And then at that point, he would go home, spend some time with his girlfriend, or he would go and begin training. So he'd be training or going and doing Zoom calls with the Chiefs. And he would do this 2 to 3 days a week. He wants to be clear that he didn't do this 5 days a week like the other like full-time staff. This is 2 to 3 days a week that he would help out. But still, even being there for two of those shifts, I just saw like it was a lot of work to be able to put a full day in at a long-term healthcare facility, then do training, and then, you know, go home and have to spend time and want to spend time with your loved ones.
You mentioned earlier that Laurent was helping COVID patients spend time with their loved ones via iPad. And in your piece, there was a really powerful example of that with an older male patient. Can you tell us about that?
Laurent told us a story about how he had brought an iPad in, you know, with, I don't know if it was his wife or his children, to be able to sit down and be able to talk to them.
You know, I had the chance to FaceTime a family of a patient with the patient. And that patient was able to see for the first time somebody that he actually cared about, and they were laughing. And then that laugh slowly went through a cry, because it's a tough time.
It also calls back to one of Laurent's reasons for getting into the medical field. And that's that Laurent needs that human interaction. He's like, that is so important. So for him to witness that human interaction, just a simple moment, a simple hello, how are you doing? Human, like that, you know, that was so important to him. And he told me when he went home that day to go to that apartment to do his, to decompress, he broke down. He broke down because he couldn't believe, like, we take it for granted. You know, we take it for granted those little moments to be able to sit in front of someone and have a conversation. And he was looking at those people as like the patients as they don't get this ever. It was a big moment for him and just a realization of like, no matter how much stress you go through in the day, it's those little moments and those little gifts he's able to help provide that make it all worth it.
And another headline we're following: Chiefs guard Laurent Duvernay-Tardif became the first NFL player to opt out of the upcoming season. He's 2 years out of medical school and has been working in a long-term care facility during this.
When does Laurent decide to forego this season in the NFL, Matt? Why did he make that decision?
So Laurent made that decision in July. He was planning in May to go back. He's like, I'm planning to do a quarantine. And he had already been doing the quarantine to be able to report to camp. But he saw how serious this was firsthand. I think what it came down to is he's like, I care so much about people, and I believe in everything the medical people in the medical field are doing right now. This is the only decision. You know, going back to the NFL, of course, it's like, that's the easy decision. That's the selfish decision. Again, it's a game for him. He loves playing in the NFL. I know he loves the Chiefs. He would dearly love to be back with that team this season. But his decision to stay was a statement to say, you know, I'm going to care about these patients. I'm going to do more good here than playing this season.
How did the Chiefs take that?
Like I mentioned before, like because Coach Reed, that connection, I think he totally understood it. He's like, that's exactly who Larry is.
Larry and I have talked a couple times and he's jumping in. Just like he does as a player, there are risks involved, but you go and you go 100 miles an hour.
He was extremely supportive. They knew what they were going to do, and they were all for it.
So I wanted to ask you to look into your crystal ball into 2021. And if the Kansas City Chiefs, Matt, end up making and winning the Super Bowl this year, which looks like a very strong possibility, how do you think Laurent is going to feel watching from home?
Let's be serious. It's going to crush him. Laurent is through and through. He's a team player. He loves his team. And he would love to be on that line with those guys winning another Super Bowl. Of course. But does he regret his decision? No. Laurent knows he made the right decision. He's happy with his decision, and he would make it again gladly.
Matt, before I let you go here, you've been able to chronicle Laurent's entire story up close more than just about anyone. What do you take away from it?
That's a good question. I think Laurent's decision, it's amazing to watch, but I'm not surprised. He's such an impressive individual and someone who's so genuine. He understands the severity of what's happening. And, you know, my own father, he's actually in intensive care right now with COVID. And so I'm getting to see it firsthand. So what I took out of it, out of all of this, is that I am glad we have people like Laurent doing what they're doing, and not just him, all the medical professionals out there that are putting the effort into keeping us safe and doing what they can do to battle this thing. And, you know, Laurent's just one of many, but on top of that, he's just an impressive individual.
Matt Dorman, best wishes to your father, most importantly, and thank you so much for joining us on ESPN Daily.
Thank you.
You can watch Matt's feature on Laurent Duvernay-Tardif as part of a 3-hour special. SportsCenter presents 2020, Heroes, History, and Hope, which airs tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Coming up, even just taking a walk outside has carried an extra meaning during the pandemic. ESPN's Allison Glock has more on why.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way, or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another voice I want you to hear. With 2020 coming to a close, we're turning to various voices across ESPN to get perspective on a year that's going to be stuck in our memory for a long time to come. Here's Allison Glock on the power of walking through the pandemic.
It's 5 o'clock and the sun is beginning to dip as my 20-year-old daughter pulls on her coat and heads out for her daily walk. She carries a backpack loaded with her journal, a beanie, whatever book she's reading. She dons her mask and canvasses our neighborhood, striding purposefully as if she has somewhere to be. When the sun starts to set, she sits on a patch of earth or a park bench to catch her breath and stares into the sky, tracking the light until it bleeds into darkness. She does this every night because, she explains, it gives her something to look forward to. When she comes home, cheeks flush, hair windswept, my daughter does seem happier, lifted. The simple act of walking underscoring her autonomy, reminding her that she is still a human, capable of breathing fresh air, of shuttling from point A to B, that she is still a human at all. For months now, we've all been neck deep in cruel absurdity, in absurd cruelty, grasping for meaning in a vacuum. Left with nowhere else, we return to the body, because among other gifts, the body does not lie. For her part, my younger daughter runs. I hear her in the early morning, tiptoeing past the sleeping dogs, her lanyard key jangling around her neck. She hates running. What she really wants is to be back on her university campus with friends, to be eating crappy cafeteria food and working on the local farm and stressing about grades. Instead, she's in her childhood bedroom, zooming in front of a screen stacked with largely silent black squares, doing her best to act like this is still worthwhile, her sorrow an anvil on her chest. So she runs. She runs as fast as she can. Recently, I took a long hike of my own. I thought about an Olympic hopeful I'd interviewed years ago. I met him at a high school athletic field where he was running drills after his shift. There were weeds clogging the edges of the neglected track. Empty beer bottles and greasy burger wrappers had blown into the lanes. The surface was cracked and buckled in spots. But the track was close to his house, so that's where he trained. Unsung and alone. For an event years into an uncertain future. For a team he may not even make. I remember watching him round the curve back then, cheeks puffed, eyes glazed with pain, and wondering what kept him running. I remember thinking how difficult it must be to sacrifice so much, to believe blindly in a story as yet unwritten. Our season of grief is almost over. Mercifully, there is a vaccine, and with it, a promise eventually to re-enter the world. Until then, we walk. We hike. We run in circles. We propel our bodies forward. We tread the ground. And we do not fall through.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.